The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the Acme Packing Company podcast feed. I am Justice Mosqueda. This is Draft Talk. We've started again. I'm joined here by Tyler Brooks. Say what's up to the people, Tyler.
It's never been more over for the haters. We're back.
We're back, baby. We're back, baby. And we have a quarterback. You can't believe it.
I was making stupid Drake May photoshops earlier this season.
Oh, man. I recorded a podcast with Charles McDonald, Yahoo Sports, if you guys want to go check that out. And he did not let me live down the fact that I was using AI to look up, you know, Caleb May in a Packers or Caleb and May in Packers uniforms at about midseason, which again, I don't feel bad about. They couldn't complete a pass midseason.
What a turnaround.
Yeah. What? Just insane turnaround for the team. Happy Valentine's Day and also Ash Wednesday, the most ambitious crossover event in the history of the world. I didn't know they could both be on the same day until I looked at my calendar yesterday and was like, whoa, they're both happening. Same time.
This is how you wanted to spend it, right? With your boy.
Yeah, well, Addy just left for work. It's 8:30 West Coast time. Addy just left for work, so she's not coming back till 5. I got some time to...
I got a paint and sip to do tonight.
Do you?
Pray for me. We'll see. I have no artistic ability.
I got to clean the hell out of the house before she gets home. figure out some time to go to the gym in the meantime. We are going to talk about the Packers draft needs and just kind of talk about the draft overall in the first half of this podcast. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in this draft class. And then the second half, we're going to finally touch on the coaching staff changes, especially on, you know, the defensive side of the ball, obviously. So let's get this thing started. One thing that is interesting, this was something I looked up. We're recording this on Valentine's Day. This came out yesterday. So this is Dane Brugler's big board. He came out with his top 100. Dane is, I don't pay much attention to Kuiper and stuff like that. I kind of think that a lot of Kuiper's takes are just made for the content of it. Dane is a guy who's, I know for a fact, has turned down multiple NFL opportunities. And Dane puts in the work. I don't know if you guys have ever read the actual beast scouting reports that he puts out. Yeah, the beast. He's done that for a decade now. I actually talked to him about his rankings a little bit yesterday, just like in his DMs and stuff like that. Like that guy works, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's one of the few people that, like, you know, they have opinions about the draft. And if I haven't seen a guy, I actually kind of like weigh what their opinion is in terms of, like, you know, is this guy actually worth watching? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. We'll go through the position groups, you know, individually, but these are all of the guys. Well, I don't want to just list off the entire names, but so he dropped his top 100, right? I think overall, you know, we ran a poll at APC about, you know, the Packers' top needs, had the fans vote on that. You know, running back, safety, linebacker were the ones that came up as the biggest needs for the team, right?
Sense.
Dane's number one running back is Jonathan Brooks out of Texas. He's ranked 70th overall. He's also injured, right? Yep. People thought maybe he was going to come back this year. At linebacker, he has two guys going in the top 75. That's not great. And then at safety, he has two guys going in the first two rounds of the draft, right? It's an interesting situation. I think, you know, as we talk about this draft class, it's going to be interesting because the Packers' biggest needs are where the draft is the most weak.
Yep.
So, you know, they're going to have to figure something out. They have 11 draft picks. This isn't to cause anxiety or anything like that. It's just worth noting, right? Like maybe linebacker or one of these top safeties is something that you're looking at with that first second round pick that you got from the Jets. But there might not be a guy there for the second round pick.
Yep.
Right. And I don't think that there's a guy at any of these positions that you would take in the first round, unless it's Cooper DeJean, which we'll talk about him in the safeties episode. But, you know, he's a cornerback. He played kind of a hybrid role in previous seasons, and people, you know, because he's a white dude, want to move him to safety. I think he's going to end up sticking at corner, but, you know, if the Packers are kind of spoiled with riches just in terms of, you know, where they're at, they might look at a guy like him and say, like, well, we can move him to safety and get him on the field immediately. And if we need to move him to corner down the line, we can do that too. So
I'm very curious, and I'm sure we'll get to this in the second half of this episode, but just how much different is the defense going to look schematically with the new defensive coordinator? Is it Halfley? Okay. I'm still a bit behind on just my Packers news covering so many sports right now. But just schematically, I'm so curious to see what the differences are. What is he going to want to emphasize compared to what Joe Barry was doing and what kind of impact that has on Gutekunst's draft strategy? I know he already said it's not going to make much of a difference, but in reality, Halfley's definitely going to be like, listen, these are the guys or positions where we really need to upgrade if this is going to work. So I am very curious about that.
Yeah, and Goot was even like, you know, as we get further down the process, we'll talk about, you know, what kind of guys he's looking at. And that's a real thing, right? Like, this is a subject that I've brought up before, and it usually gets met with frustration from fans, and not just Packers fans, just fans in general. But, like, you know, you talk about a draft board, right? And I think people think that it's like 500 players long, including undrafted free agents, and you just like work your way down it and all that stuff. Once you're talking about actually turning in a pick for a player and saying, like, this is where we think that there's going to be value, and, you know, you're talking about post medical red flags, post character red flags, all that stuff. You know, if you have a guy who's he's going to get drafted in the first round, but he's a fourth round pick on your board, you're probably just not going to have that guy on your board, right? So, like, your actual draft board is probably like 120 players, I would assume, like in general, on average for an NFL team, not just for the Packers, but just in general. The reason for that, right, is it helps you kind of focus on what guys you actually want. For a couple reasons, right? So, like, one, you can get eyes on them, right? So you're not having a defensive coordinator drink water through a fire hose, right?
Yes.
And he can actually look at some of these guys and say, like, hey, I know who these players are on draft day. So when you ask me a question and we want to move around in the draft, right? And, so, you know, hey, we can trade a second for 2/3. You got to match up players to those picks, right? And, you know, actually be able to kind of weigh those decisions. Said that before, fans are like, you know, they have a full scouting staff, all this stuff. Why are they only ranking 120 players? They're not only ranking 120 players. They're only really interested in 120 players.
Exactly.
Okay, let's get into positions. I guess we start with quarterback. They're not going to spend a pick on quarterback, right?
No, but I am curious to know who your QB1 is. Is it Caleb?
It's May.
It's May for me. Dang it. Why do we always do this? Every year.
Caleb does too much dumb stuff sometimes. And look, dude, Caleb could be, like, I was a doubter in Mahomes. I was a doubter in Josh Allen coming out. Like, that's just not my type of quarterback. In terms of assuming that an NFL coaching staff is going to get that guy right. Yeah. Right. I kind of think those guys are exceptions to the rule. Caleb is freelancing a whole lot. I think my opinion on Caleb could be changed depending on, you know, if I actually got to sit down with him and work with him on a whiteboard and all that stuff and got to know him as a kid. But from the outside looking in, you know, I think May is, he's got a better chance to hit for sure because of how he can operate in structure.
I'm so glad we're on the same page there. I wrote down for my comp for Caleb Williams, he's a thicker Kyler Murray, which I really like, but he has those Justin Fields tendencies that I hate.
Yeah.
We're holding onto the ball way too damn long. And with May, there's just so many plays where, you know, the arm talent, the athleticism pop out. But then there's also those plays where, like, he makes a check at the line of scrimmage because he sees something in the secondary and then just gashes defenses. Like, his pre- and post-snap processing blows me away, especially when you think about, what is he going to be, 22 as a rookie? Like, he's still pretty damn young. I remember you and I were talking about him in last year's draft process. Like, have you watched this North Carolina quarterback as a redshirt freshman? Just the maturity and all the tools there just blow me away. And I keep saying the only way I'd be nervous about what the Bears do at quarterback is if they took May. If they take Williams, I know Shane Waldron's considered a good coach. But if it's May, I sweat a little bit.
Did you see the JSN comment?
Yes. Carmen, the guy that asked him the question is an old coworker of mine, Mark Carmen, who's just a phenomenal dude. So I was like, Carm, what are you doing, man?
For the people who aren't aware, Super Bowl week, they have the thing called the car wash, right? It's just basically like you're sitting in a big convention center. People are just walking around. You can get them around for interviews and all sorts of stuff. Usually they're hawking stuff. So, like, if you've seen a lot of, like, Jordan Love interviews recently, it's because he was there for Old Spice, right? And he's supposed to be promoting Old Spice when he's on with Dan Patrick or Micah Parsons or whoever it is, right? They asked JSN what he thought of now Bears offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. His first response was, "Is this live?" And then, like, his next response was like, good luck." So maybe not the most well thought of offensive coordinator. Okay, quarterback, I don't think they're going to do anything. Maybe they draft a guy late to push Sean Clifford, but this isn't really a draft class where there's going to be a ton of guys drafted in day three.
And I've only watched 41 players so far, so there's no way in hell I've watched the day three quarterbacks yet.
I've seen the UTEP quarterback a little bit.
What? Know they're – yeah.
The UTEP quarterback, even know the names, is weird. Dude. His stats aren't good. He's got a hose. Like, he's actually – he's the anti-Sean Clifford. So it would be interesting to see, you know, do the whole Joker thing, right? Break the pool stick. Yeah, break the pool stick, let them go at it, see who survives. Running back, this is a position where the team is going to need to do something at some point this offseason. Aaron Jones is under contract. The team can probably shave off like $1.5 million of his cap hit. Just in terms of him turning down money, you got Jones to agree to a contract restructure last year. I think they can do similar to something this year. That $1.5 million is basically the difference between what he's going to make in 2024 and what he made in 2023. So I think you can make those things match is basically what it comes down to. But still, he has a $17 million cap hit. You know, you shave $1.5 million off of that. Still pretty significant. I don't know if they end up void yearing him and just kind of dropping the cap hit that way and just say, hey, we're going to pay it in the future. AJ Dillon is going to be a free agent. Matt LaFleur's already said that, you know, he would be willing to have Dillon come back next season. I think Dillon is going to test the free agency market. And you know, if he doesn't find something better, he'll probably come back to Green Bay. Can't imagine someone is going to give him a full blown starting role, but
there's a role for him somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back, though.
Same. Either. Yeah.
Especially in this running back class, right?
He loves Door County. Like, that probably is a factor. Mayor. Yeah.
Patrick Taylor is an RFA. I don't think that he's going to be back, at least on that contract. There's precedent in the past where a guy is a restricted free agent, which means that, you know, you have first right of refusal and all that stuff. The Packers don't actually tender that guy. Tyler Davis is an example, right? They say, hey, you're not actually worth, you know, $2 million, $2.5 million. hit free agency and then come back as a you know, minimum player. Maybe that's something that they do with Patrick Taylor. And then you have Emmanuel Wilson, the rookie, who I think had like 17 carries this past season. So, you know, Jones isn't going to be a bell cow. We know that. And, you know, he just had his best stretch of his career because A.J. Dillon had a broken thumb, basically, you know, to end the season. But they don't really trust any of these guys behind him either. And they're going to need an RB2 at some point. I don't know if it's going to come in free agency or the draft, but they're going to need to address that.
It's such a weird RB class because there's no one that's even close to a first rounder, maybe not even a second rounder in this class. But there are some fun ones. I mean, Trey Benson, I really like. I think he's kind of an angry runner. Bucky Irving just screams Aaron Jones' successor as the undersized guy with contact balance and
go Ducks.
Wiggle. You must love that guy. He was a very fun watch for me. I really enjoyed him.
He was very fun. Trey Benson actually started at Oregon too.
I did not know that.
He ended up transferring out. Yeah.
The guy that Packers Twitter seems to love that I cannot get my head around is Blake Corum. He has like 700 career.
That's just Big Ten stuff, right?
But you got 700 career college carries, 750, something like that. You're coming out. You have a season ending knee injury 1 year and just the athleticism. I don't think is there. He's going to be like, what, 24, 25 as a rookie. It's just all those things scream to me. It's going to be a guy that gets overdrafted by a franchise. It's like national champion. He's a winner. Look at the bloody face during the games. I just don't see the value there. And long term, I just don't think that's the right fit. But there are some guys I need to watch more. But a few guys that I've already graded, I've really enjoyed that I think would be fun RB2s.
The riser right now is Jalen Wright out of Tennessee. He was a guy who people didn't really have on the radar until he declared for the draft. Now he's being talked about as a top 100 pick. I haven't seen him personally, but I know that when he came out, he was, you know, it's a weird thing. Like, so here's another thing that we could talk about with the draft class. This is the fewest amount of underclassmen that have declared for a draft in over a decade.
Wow.
So basically what's happening is if you're not going in the first four rounds, you're going back to school. This is how it's working with NIL and stuff. That is not how it used to work, man. I know agents who were pushing kids, you know, 3-4 years ago and were like, if you have a chance at making the roster, leave now because all that matters is the second contract. Well, NIL money is becoming involved and NIL agents and your NFL agents are different things. So now you're having multiple people in these kids' ear. Overall, I think it's better for the kids and the sport. So,
I agree.
You know, not too much to bitch about, but it's worth mentioning, you know, virtually all these underclassmen who are coming out are guys who were expected to go in the first four rounds.
Yeah. I think once we hit that equilibrium with NIL, because right now it's, you know, I feel old saying it as a high school coach, but like it's the Wild West out there. But once we hit that equilibrium between NIL and, you know, going pro, it will be better for both sports because it'll allow kids to develop at the college level while getting paid. And allow those upperclassmen who have developed to be more pro ready once they go to the NFL. I think it's just going to be a rough couple of years as we figure that balance out.
Rough. Well,
yeah,
we can talk about that in the coaching, coaching part of this. Let's talk about tight end and wide receiver at the same time. Everyone other than probably Tyler Davis is coming back.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to spend any money on Tyler Davis coming back, but it also wouldn't shock me. They really seem to like him on special teams. I don't think they're going to add many bodies to either position. Like they already have like 8 mouths to feed at wide receiver. They have 2.5 mouths to feed at tight end. I don't think DeGuara, he's technically listed as fullback, is going to come back either. So,
yeah
I mean, I think they're fine there.
That's my only question is, do you look for that hybrid tight end fullback guy to replace DeGuara in this draft? Believe it or not, I haven't looked at any of those guys as much as I would like to know what those names are.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm not watching tight ends this year. I can tell you that right now.
Boy, did we have fun last year, though. I really enjoyed watching all those tight ends last year. Darnell Washington, though, pour one out.
I want to give us a pat on the back. We fucking nailed the draft last year.
We did. Oh, we nailed it.
We knew exactly who these players were.
Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks. We were psyched about Van Ness, who flashed.
Wes Graven Kraft.
Yeah.
We were there. Ugh. Valentine wasn't a guy that I saw until post draft, but Valentine
Same.
was like my guy. I was like, what? How is this guy available in the seventh? That's nuts. Yeah. So, yeah, we nailed it last year,
That
dude.
felt
Let's
good. That felt
do it
real good.
again. Let's find a
Yes.
safety. For the love of
Oh,
God, let's find some safeties.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Offensive line, elephant in the room is David Bakhtiari. The question I have is like Rashid Walker. People are like, yeah, he did well enough at left tackle. I don't know at left tackle if that's a position where you're like, this guy did well enough, right? I
Yes.
think that's a position where take a swing if you got to take a swing. And this is a really good offensive line class where we were
It
talking
is.
about, the positions don't stack up that well for the Packers' needs. If they view left tackle or right guard as a need, there's so many guys in this draft class, and we'll go more in depth on that. But there might be 10 offensive linemen drafted in the first round,
Yeah,
like
there's a
compared to
lot of
last
good
year,
ones.
where there was that line in the sand, right? And it was basically like Broderick Jones, and it was like, you got to be able to get Broderick Jones, or you're just like not drafting a guy in like the first three rounds at tackle, right? That's
Yeah.
totally different compared to this class.
What I'm surprised about too is just the depth of the interior offensive lineman at the top. I mean, what's the Pac-12 cooking? Because they got a couple guys in the interior that I am in love with right
Yeah,
now.
they got physical. That's why,
Yeah.
look, I don't want to do this around a bunch of Big Ten listeners, but
Hey,
like
you're a
people are
Big Ten
like,
now. Welcome.
how are Oregon and Washington going to match up with the physicality of the
They're
Big
pretty
Ten? And I'm
physical.
like, we're going to score 80 on you guys.
Yeah.
You don't understand. We are Ohio State now. Yeah, but like Graham Barton, the kid from
Yeah.
Duke, Jackson Powers Johnson, who I think can play center and play guard. The kid from Washington, I haven't seen him.
Oh my God. He's probably my favorite of this group. He's the guy that played primarily left tackle for the Huskies. He will almost certainly get kicked inside early.
Yeah, I've seen
He
everyone talks
moves.
about him as a guard.
The thing that stood out to me, I was trying to watch Washington's offense, and obviously, you want to watch Penix, you want to watch the receivers, but they run a lot of outside zone concepts, and they're like, how did this left tackle reach around and get to this landmark, get to this guy? His movement skills are outrageously good, and his hands. There's a lot about that guy I think would be good. I'm curious to see how he tests. That's the thing with this group. There are so many of these tackles that can kick inside that the Packers have to be like foaming at the mouth considering taking one or two of these guys because they need help on the interior O-line. It got ugly at times this year.
Yeah, I don't know if they actually push Myers. Like, even, Love in his interviews during Super Bowl week was hyping up Myers. John Runyon Jr., though, is going to be a free agent. The question then becomes, like, Sean Ryan, are you going to let him be an uncontended starter? Terry talking, Bakhtiari potential replacement, Runyon potential replacement, and then you have the Yosh Nijman, leaving situation, too. So that's a whole lot of backfill that you have to be doing at the position at the very least, right? So I would not be shocked if the Packers spend two, three draft picks on offensive linemen. It's going to be one of the positions that I study the most this offseason for sure. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. I guess we can talk about scheme change a little bit here. Don't expect any real change on the defensive side in terms of personnel.
But
From
four
like
down
a,
linemen. But four down linemen, Justice.
yeah, I
Oh my
guess.
gosh.
Anyone who is playing end or tackle is going to play defensive tackle in this scheme. Anyone who's playing outside linebacker is going to play defensive end now. I know people are like, which one of these guys is going to be the Sam? Not Rashawn Gary or Preston Smith. No, that's not like Preston Smith's going to be an every down 4-3 defensive end, which kind of negates some of his benefit, like some of the best things that he does, which is like his versatility. That's a whole different conversation, but like, interior defensive tackle. I don't know if they add another body. They could. I wouldn't expect it to be super high in the draft, but like, you're working with Kenny Slayton, Wyatt Brooks. That's a pretty good start. And then who
Brooks.
knows about Wooden, right?
Man, did they start stepping up in the tail end of the year, though? I mean, what I used to think was a weakness. I mean, kind of turned around. I mean, I think Carl Brooks, especially, just the flashes he showed as a rookie, for a guy that when we watched, he was like, who was this like 300-pound Mac pass rusher? And then all of a sudden, he's been a very confident defensive lineman, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I actually wonder, like, I probably should have watched an all-star game of Brooks, you know, playing in a real NFL system. Because when I watched him out of Bowling Green, I just kind of threw my hands up and was like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea. You know, that probably would have informed me a little bit more. And, you know, that's why all these guys travel and all that stuff to the all-star circuit and all that.
Before we move from D-line, there is one guy that, if he somehow fell, would be so fun here. And it won't happen. But have you watched Byron Murphy yet at Texas?
Oh, the massive dude? He's like 330, right?
No, not Sweat. The other one.
Oh, no, I haven't seen him. I've only paid attention to Sweat.
That boy twitched up. He fast for a 300-pounder, and his motor is outrageous.
I know everyone who talked about Texas was like, yeah, that's where they make their money.
It was nice. It was fun to watch. Those two were just very fun.
Defensive end, we're going to have Gary, Smith, Van Ness. Maybe, I think there's like a 20% chance Smith doesn't come back, but I doubt it. And Igbari is obviously going to start the season on the PUP list. And then you have Brenton Cox. Plus, did you know how many outside linebacker, now defensive ends, are on the Packers roster once you include reserve futures contracts?
Oh, no. You think I'm keeping up? You think I have the time to keep up with reserve future contracts right now?
They signed,
that's a lot. Damn.
They signed five guys to reserve futures contracts at the position.
Wow.
Like, I think that might just be a spot where they say, like, hey, we need four to start the year. Here's seven guys to push Brenton Cox, right? Maybe they spend a draft pick there.
I'm curious if Cox at DN, and I know it, like, it's very negligible or very minuscule changes from old to end in the system, but he does play a lot with power, and at least on his college tape. So I'm curious to see how that translates.
I do think Van Ness and Gary will be better with the handle.
Van Ness just makes so much sense for this, and yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about that.
Van Ness is a guy we even talked about last year, and we were like, he doesn't know what he's doing when he's standing up still, right?
yep.
So, yeah, that'll be interesting. Inside, or not inside linebacker, off-ball linebacker. Sorry, folks, I'm still transitioning to 4-3 defense. Devondre, I think, is going to get cut.
Should
you
be.
You could save about $10 million in cash by letting him go, and I don't think he's worth $10
million. He started becoming a distraction along with his level of play, and I don't mean to say that cruelly, but a lot of those passive-aggressive social media posts about playing injured and things like that. Boy, I just think you're slow now. The on-field stuff was like teams just knew. They knew immediately we're going to pick apart Devontae Campbell. And boy, did it show. And I know Quaid had an up-and-down season as well, but I can see the potential with him. Campbell's just done. Unless he had something super major he was dealing with. But even then, that's 2 years in a row where you just did not live up to expectations.
And again, $10 million. Are you taking a $10 million?
I would like the $10 million.
When you're pressed up against the cap and stuff. Isaiah McDuffie and Quay Walker almost certainly will start on this team next year. Mm-hmm. Eric Wilson and Christian Welsh, both of these guys are primarily special teams guys, are going to be unrestricted free agents. The only other inside line or off-ball linebacker on this team is Christian Young, who is a reserve futures contract player. He was a converted safety from the college level. This is one where I'm like, do the Packers use three draft picks on linebacker? Like, they might need to use a ton.
Unfortunately, not a great class for it. Can I give you one name that I've fallen in love with, just pairing him with Quay?
Go for it, because I've watched like 20 linebackers already. I'm rip ready, roaring to go at linebacker.
Edgerrin Cooper. We got to talk. Can we just do
the A&M kid?
That boy fast is just every time I watch
that boy flies. Yeah. Watch the Alabama game. He does all sorts of stuff. The guys at the top of the draft, I think, well, we could talk about it a little bit without spoiling next week's episode.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know how we're going to record next week's episode, because I got to go to Cabo next week.
I'm moving. So
yeah, maybe 2 weeks from now's episode. Edgerrin Cooper and Colson, the kid from Michigan, both of them are kind of like second, third, you know, right around that turn. probably late second, I would say, mid to late second round picks, who are more athletic than they are polished guys.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about at the top of the linebacker class right now.
Don't you – this is just me thinking because I'm not used to, you know, 4-3 ideology, but wouldn't you want Quay as the Sam eating up blocks and then one of these fast athletic guys – trying to just get into the backfield or find those lanes.
I think Quay's going to play the Mike, and then
Mike. Yep.
Yeah. The Will is going to be whoever's more. So he's a weak side linebacker. He's going to have to be like more coverage based, right? Like he's going to have to play.
Which
the
Cooper can
and stuff.
I haven't watched Colson yet, but Cooper could definitely do that.
Yeah. And then depending how they use the Sam, like there's different ways to use the Sam. Like, if you look at like how the Seahawks used to do it, right? Their Sam was basically like a drop down guy, walked down to the line of scrimmage. He was almost like a would do the run defender stuff for a 3-4 outside linebacker, but then would drop into coverage too, right?
Yep.
So that would kind of be the Preston Smith type of thing. But there's no way that they're going to do that down to down if they're going to be a 4-3 team.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to play a 270 pounder in Preston Smith at Sam. Yep. So they got to figure something out. Corner, everyone is mocking the Packers a corner.
It was one corner specifically.
Well, so yeah, there is DeGene, but like I'm seeing there's so many mock drafts where it's like
I know
Kool-Aid McKinstry and stuff like that. The kid, Wiggins, the kid from Clemson. I don't think corner is a big need for this team, man. And I know anytime anyone says Eric Stokes' name, you just get hit with can he stay healthy? It's different injuries. So like I'm not really that worried about that. And then also we have Carrington Valentine and Keyshawn can get re-signed and just play the nickel.
Yep.
So like, okay, Stokes is hurt. We still have, I think Valentine's a pretty good player. Did no one see what Valentine was doing this year?
And he was
going crazy.
And he was crazy, which I loved. He was talking shit over everything, which I really enjoyed. I think the reason they keep mocking corner is it could push and cause some competition. Jair's been weird about the offseason. Obviously, he's not going anywhere, but it's been
Jair's
a weird.
Not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere.
It's not
but
happening.
I think it's more of a value perspective where the top of this class is so loaded with very, very good corners, but then
corner
it's just a straight cliff.
And
it's
receiver.
It's a cliff as soon as you hit like the 5, 6, 7 guys, however many. It just, there's a drop off. You get all these day one guys, and then you're probably going to look at day three.
Yeah. It's kind of like offensive line was last year. Safety, oh boy. Can you name, there's three safeties under contract for the Packers this year. Can you name them?
Are they, did any of them start?
I think so. Yeah, one.
Not Owens, not Ford, not Savage.
Nope.
Oh, I'm screwed. No, Anthony Johnson.
Yes, Anthony Johnson Jr. I think he made a start. Benny Sapp III, who was called off the practice
squad. That's not a real person.
And then Zane Anderson, who's picked up off of Wade.
Definitely not a real person.
So, yeah, that's our safety group right now. This is another do we draft three position, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think safety, linebacker, biggest needs by far. Special teams, not even worth talking about right now. I will say, on the special teams front, the transition from the 4-3 to – or from the 3-4 to the 4-3 might impact special teams a little bit just in terms of the bodies. You're going to end up – we just talked about personnel and how players aren't going to be playing really any sort of different positions, right? With that being said, you're going to need more bodies at inside at off-ball linebacker, which means they're going to have to come from somewhere else. The Packers don't really play wide receivers at special teams. Under Passaccia, at least, that's kind of been one of his changes. So taking away bodies from safety, that's really the only place that you can shave off. So that means, you know, Passaccia isn't going to get his designated special teams players, you know, three special teams players only at safety. Maybe some of these wide receivers end up playing a little bit more teams and, you know, a guy like Malik Heath has to get involved, right? That's the only difference, really, I see from a roster construction standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it with Heath. I like his physicality and speed. I could imagine that he would have some kind of role on special teams. Yeah. But this is your wheelhouse, man. You're the sicko that charts all the punt coverage. And You're like, I think they switched out this guy on punt protection. I'm like, I don't know.
I punt protection is still, it's important, man.
It is.
It lost us a playoff game. I'm going to continue to pay attention to it. All right, let's take a little break. Actually, any final thoughts on the needs? Like, corner, you need depth.
There's
a couple positions you can add at, but, like, I still think the big four are the four that, you know, the fans also pin down, right? It's running back. It's the offensive line. It's safety. It's linebacker. Those are the positions I'm fully committed to watching this year. I hate watching safeties.
Yep.
I'm going to have to do it again.
I know how much defense was a problem last year, and obviously a new coach, you're going to want to add more talent there. I just think it's so important to find more offensive linemen. And fortunately, the Packers are historically excellent at finding offensive linemen. I just want to know if they take one early, find a versatile guy that can play multiple spots like Elton, like Zach Tom. If you're thinking about how special the offense looked at times last year, maybe you want to keep protecting Jordan Love, keep him healthy, because I am already considering MVP futures. Like, that's how excited I am about this offense.
Here is how you measure if the Packers have done enough on the offensive line in the draft. Is Royce Newman a factor? Right? Like, is Royce Newman still in consideration as an injury guy off of the bench? We didn't really have to think about Royce Newman this year, and I like that. And I would like to continue that moving forward. With all due respect to Royce. All right, let's take a break. And on the other side, we'll talk about the changes with the defensive coordinator and the defensive staff.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we are back. All right. What was your reaction when they hired Jeff Hafley?
The Snoop Dogg who? Because I didn't know who that was. I was trying to keep an eye on things. And again, granted, right now, obviously job change. It's hard for me to follow the Packers as closely. But boy, was I keeping an eye on the defensive coordinator rumors as much as I could. The more I dove into it and I listened to that like hour long interview he had done with the former player. I can't remember the guy's name.
He's a former Penn State kid.
Yeah.
He was like a 5-star tight end or something like that. And now he does podcasting. If you type in just like Jeff Hafley interview,
yeah,
it's going to pop up. It came out the morning
yep,
that Hafley agreed to be the Packers defensive coordinator, which is kind of funny.
I really liked hearing him speak.
Talks like Shanahan. That was my first reaction when I watched it. I mean, obviously, we're not talking about the caliber of the coach. We're just literally talking about mannerisms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, this is, I could see why Shanahan wanted this guy around for so long. Like, they're the same dude.
I'm just interested to see what it looks like on the field at this point, because you can just look at his experience and hear him talk for so long before you actually see what it looks like on the field. But it's definitely a bigger conversation about, wow, these college coaches do not want to coach in college anymore.
So let's talk about, let's just go through his resume, right? He's a small school coach, ends up becoming a defensive assistant for Pittsburgh as a GA there. Famously, he worked with Darrell Revis. I think he even talked about in that interview, he was like, man, I had Darrell Revis and I was coaching corners. I thought I was a hell of a cornerbacks coach. thought that was funny. he ended up going to Rutgers and then Tampa. If you're doing the coaching tree thing there, right? That's Shiano, right? Mm. And Shiano ends up bleeding into Urban Meyer, which is why, you know, the Ryan Day stuff starts to make sense and all that. And we could talk about that moving forward. After the Buccaneers, he's with the Browns and the 49ers. Obviously, that, you know, he has crossover with Shanahan there. So last time he coached in the NFL was 18 with the Niners. So we're talking pre-COVID with all this stuff. The Niners are interesting, right? Because that's the one defensive scheme that has been able to stick in the post-safety stuff. And we're talking post-safety. That's, you know, the safety in the middle of the field, right? That's the one team that had iterated the Seahawks defense and kind of been able to keep it together and not just be a cover three match team, you know, that gets destroyed by all these condensed sets, which is what's happening in the league and why you really don't see, you know, even Pete Carroll switched to basically like a split high safety defense, you know, at the end with Seattle. Everyone else is running either the blitz bluff stuff, right? Which is, you know, all the Rex Ryan tree, right? We saw that with Pettine. We're seeing that with all the Ravens guys right now, or it's just straight up match quarters Fangio stuff, right? So there's basically those three big trees in the NFL right now, not including whatever the hell Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio were doing. I guess Gus Bradley is still like kind of running like true blue what the old Seahawks stuff was.
Man, did Colts fans not like that? No,
buddy, I don't know why they keep giving Gus Bradley jobs, because he's not changing and it's not going good.
Nope.
So yeah. So I think it's an interesting hire from that perspective. Now, how does he end up in the college world again after spending 2012 through 2018 at the NFL level? Ryan Day, who people don't remember, worked under Chip Kelly with the San Francisco 49ers in that 1 year that he was with the Niners, right? Ryan Day ends up getting the call up to be Ohio State's offensive coordinator. And then, you know, shortly after Urban's gone, he becomes head coach. And then he taps Halfley on the shoulder. It's like, hey, do you want to be my DC? He spends the year as the DC at Ohio State. That was probably Ohio State's best season in terms of the defensive side of the ball. Now you can say Ohio State has all these skill players and all that stuff on the defensive side. You know, it's easier when you're playing with a loaded deck. I kind of agree. I wouldn't say extrapolate that toward the NFL, but he's also the guy who made Jeff Okuda a top five pick, right? And Jeff Okuda hasn't done much of anything at the NFL level. Right after that, he goes to Boston College and shit just starts hitting the fan, brother. So 2020 through 2023, he's at Boston College. One, you have the COVID thing, right? That's an obvious thing. Two, Boston College, this is something you talked to Sam, so I could talk to you about this. Sam Schwartzstein, he works for Prime Video now. He used to work with me at the XFL. We had way too many Stanford guys at the XFL in 2020. I'll say that on record, way too many guys. It is so hard for those academic schools to, and you know, every school is an academic school, but schools with super high academic standards that don't drop those standards for football players, right? To compete in this era. And I think that's one reason why you saw a guy like David Shaw just walk away.
Yep.
You can't get guys to transfer in. COVID years are getting guys extra years. You can't get these guys into grad programs. There's guys who are at Stanford, got the extra year at Stanford, and Stanford's like, you can't keep going to school here. We're not admitting you into a Stanford grad program just because you play football.
On scholarship.
Yeah, like that's not happening, right? So that's where you see the weird stuff. I think their quarterback like transferred to Mississippi State or something like that a couple years ago. Like that's kind of the situation that you're seeing with these kind of programs. On top of that, you're getting the transfer portal. So hey, you develop a guy at Boston College, he can just leave and go somewhere else.
And you're not getting a replacement because of those academic standards.
And on top of that, you're getting NIL, which Boston College can't pay anyone. So I think the Halfley thing is like Boston College is a totally different job in 2024 than it was in 2020. 100%. And on top of that, I think he had three or four different athletic directors at Boston College.
That's so unreal.
Dude, he got, look, I'm
shafted.
I'm not
pardon my language. He's shafted.
I'm not here to like hype up the Halfley hire more than it should be, but like, dude, there's a reason why some of these guys want out.
Yeah.
And 100%. UCLA is another program that's kind of like that too, where, you know, they have a certain level of academic standards. Chip Kelly just left UCLA. He was going to make like $8 million a year there. I was like, to hell with this. I'm going to go be an offense coordinator at Ohio State. And all I have to do is call plays. Like, Chip Kelly functionally said, like, I'm going to have an NFL job in terms of what I do day to day. And I'm not going to have to worry about the recruiting. And I'm not going to have to worry about the NIL. And I'm not going to have to worry about the portal and all that stuff.
I think what I like about the Halfley hire, two things, is just the variety of coaching philosophies he's been around. I think that's awesome. I like guys that aren't married to one scheme their entire coaching career, because obviously that can get stale. Oh my gosh, did I lose the second point? Oh no, it's early for us. It slipped away, unfortunately. But there it is. It didn't feel like a panic hire, whereas Joe Barry felt like a panic hire at the time.
And it's, so I will say this, right? People, if you're wondering what Halfley's going to run in the NFL, generally I would say look at the Niners tree, right? Look at what D'Amico Ryans is doing, all that stuff, right? Look at that primarily, because I think Ohio State, I think there's valid points about looking at Ohio State and saying, like, you're probably not going to do that if you aren't absolutely loaded to the gills and more talented than the other team that you're going to face, right? But at the same time, you also can't look at Boston College and say, like, yeah, you know, he's playing with a hand tied behind his back, and that's what he's going to do in the NFL, right? I think a lot of this came down to how he interviewed and stuff like that and what his plan was there. Everyone I've talked to and, you know, everything that I've seen, you know, you look at what Richard Sherman has said about Halfley in the past, right? Like, this guy knows how to coach DBs. That's, you know, that's his fastball, right? So, like, I would not worry about that at all. Now, with that being said, Boston College, he was there for 3 years. The percentages on middle of the field closed, which is, you know, that post safety, that single high safety in the middle of the field, the percentages in major college football, FBS, that they played that type of coverage. First, fifth, right? So I think it's fair to say that he's going to play with the post safety. That's what he did at Ohio State. That's what he did at Boston College to a high level. That's what the Niners tree does. That's the one through line, I think, that you can look at. Now, what does that mean, right? So we're probably going to be looking at different kind of safeties. We're going to be talking about a safety that can play in the middle of the field and then a guy who's a drop-down guy. And, it, you know, I'm not saying the guy has to be Cam Chancellor, but you look at what the Niners had when the guy was healthy and there was a guy like Hufanga, right, where he's a bigger safety who can hit. He runs a 4.6. He's not for everyone, right? Like, obviously, the teams that are running the match quarter stuff are going to say, like, hey, that guy's going to have to carry a slot vertical, right? If there's a slot fade, that guy's going to have to run 40 yards down the field. We don't want to do that. But you're the Niners, and you could find a guy like Hufanga in the fifth round, and you're like, oh, he's a Pro Bowler now in our scheme. So I think the safety positions are less interchangeable now, which I think is kind of good, especially if you're in the Packers position where you're looking to find two starters, right? I mean, let's not pretend that the Packers aren't bad at that spot right now, right? You know, maybe a guy like Johnson can be a guy who plays in the middle of the field. And then all you need to do is find a guy who can kind of play in the box. It's kind of puts you in a situation where you need less of a jack of all trades, and you're just looking for a master of none and masters of none, or master of one is what I meant to
there
say.
There we go.
Master of none. You're looking for a master of one, and you know, those guys aren't for everyone right now. So maybe one falls into your lap. I think that's one way to look at it.
I I'm excited about that because it will allow us to change our thinking for when we have to watch safeties compared to last year.
For sure.
Which I thought made it more difficult last year when we were trying to evaluate these guys. Yeah. So I think that'll make it a much more fun episode for us when we have to grind the tape on all the safeties.
I mean, that's another thing too, right? Like, think about last year. We were like, hey, they need a safety, right? Where are they going to add a safety? And we did all this work on safeties and they just didn't find value in the draft. Right. Because yep. One just didn't fall into their lap who could do everything. Yep. Right. And now you're not having to look at a guy who has to do everything. So,
yeah,
I do think that there's some value there.
Yeah. Because right? So, you're not competing with all these other teams looking for the more versatile safeties. You're looking for the guys that do the thing.
Right. Exactly. So that's just kind of my thoughts on Halfley. There are people. So like this is something. I don't know. Do you follow Stephen Godfrey?
Name sounds familiar.
He does college football stuff. He's pushing back significantly on the idea that college jobs are that bad. And he points out guys like Halfley and Chip Kelly were also on the hot seat going into this year and just decided like, hey, this is actually a better job for me moving forward. And, you know, why waste another season, you know, in a bad fit? I think that's a little bit relevant, but man, guys are trying to jump ship out of college football.
That job right now just sounds exhausting. Anyone I've talked to in even like the lower levels is just like, you're recruiting outside and inside nonstop. Like they no longer have time off. They used to have like a little balance after the season was over, but now you're trying to keep guys in house and then you have the spring game and then that transfer portal opens up and you're going to lose everyone again. Like, I don't understand how you construct a roster right now until this gets situated.
UCLA is an interesting one, right? So if you're following kind of the ripple effect of Halfley leaving Boston College, he leaves Boston College. Bill O'Brien takes Boston College. That opens up the OC job at Ohio State. Chip Kelly leaves the UCLA job to be the OC at Ohio State. And then UCLA has to promote internally for Deshaun Foster. There's a 30-day transfer window that opens up as soon as a head coach leaves. UCLA has a transfer portal window that is open right now, basically right before the start of spring football. And then there's going to be another 30-day transfer window immediately after that. So UCLA just came off of a transfer window, is now in the middle of a second transfer window, and then is going to have a third transfer window. They basically have like a, what, since the beginning of January until basically the draft, like literally like 4 months of their guys are free to leave whenever they want. Right. Like it's a lot, man, dude, that's a lot. And that drives people crazy. I know, earlier on before they had a little bit more of the, before they had some more restrictions on the transfer portal, like I'd heard stories of like a dude who's, you know, hey, he's 4th of July. He's on vacation with his kids and his family, right? And he learns, you know, a linebacker is hitting the portal. And now he's leaving the cookout on 4th of July to hit the transfer portal, you know, see who's in the transfer portal and watch film because he needs to backfill at that position, right?
That miserable. Sucks. Miserable.
That sucks. And then everything comes down to money, too. So everything is just fundraising, 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 especially for a head coach like in Halfley's position. And it just sucks to have your hand out constantly and be like, guys, we need more money. UCLA is another one that was interesting. Their athletic director vehemently was opposed to their boosters funding their NIL program because they still needed money for facilities. These are the same dollars, right? And you're saying like, hey, don't pay the kids because we need to get the facilities first and then we could pay the kids in a couple years. Like, this sucks. It sucks that this is how this is all going. I don't think that any of it's going to like change significantly until the kids are considered employees of the state. Yep. And then who knows what's going to happen. The big thing that's – have you seen the – I think it was Princeton. Did you see the Princeton stuff?
Yes, their players are unionizing. Is that right?
So the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. I should know this because I work with the union, Vox. Said that Princeton's basketball team should be considered employees of the university and therefore should be allowed to unionize. And what's going to come from that, who knows, right? Like that can go a lot of different ways. They've kind of done this in the past before too. I know everyone remembers the Northwestern stuff that kind of ended up turning into nothing. These are significant because these are all private institutions, mm-hmm. right? The NLRB doesn't have anything to do with state-run institutions. But if schools like Princeton are called, their student athletes are called employees, that is going to have ripple effects in major college football too. And I wouldn't expect that to last much longer. Now, what happens when they're called employees? Who knows? I don't think it's out of the question that the kids wouldn't have to go to school. Like, I think that's on the table. Like, they would basically become
Cardale Jones' dream come true.
I mean, it's not out of the question that college football would just be viewed as a marketing arm for the university, and then they would just be called employees through that perspective, right?
Yeah.
I know, buddy, let me tell you, working with the XFL, do you know what our biggest expense was? It wasn't player salaries. It was insurance. The fact that you can get workers' comp and stuff like that, which is what a lot of these arguments come from. I mean, the reason that student athlete became a thing was because it was the school's retort to workers' comp, right? If that changes, a lot of the money is just going to go up and up and up. And I think that there's a valid argument from people that are like, hey, this is going to kill the non-revenue sports. Yeah, dude. Yep. I think it is. And I think they're doing the math on that, and they're saying we're willing to go down that road. It's going to become a big question of whether or not, like, I know this sounds like I'm rambling. I'm trying to talk about these big ideas.
It's the most fascinating discussion in sport in America right now to me. I wrote college papers about this. Oh my God, when was that? 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing this unfold and just all these unintended consequences. And how does it shape the future of not just college football, but just collegiate sport?
So here's another one, right? If they're employees, why would they graduate out?
Mm-hmm. Shit.
Ooh. I mean, college professors don't do 4 years and then walk away, right? So, like, why would there be an expiration date on how long you could play? For, you know, if you're considered the marketing arm of the university, why would there be a limit there?
Does that become a negotiation with the NFL where they're like, listen, well, yeah, holy
that's
shit.
That's something too that people have pointed out and have been like, hey, like, why couldn't the NFL just draft kids? And if they go back to school, you still own their rights, right? It's like the old like NBA stuff, right? Where Larry Bird was already a Celtic by the time he ended up leaving Indiana State, right? Like there's precedent for all this stuff. And I don't think a lot of this is, solved. The one thing I will say is like the USC lawsuit, that's another one that is operating out there. And that might be like the big one. I think the courts are going to side with the kids almost every time, especially with the way, I mean, I don't want to make this political and all that stuff, but like the way that the courts have been built in this country, like they're kind of all leaning that way right now. So yeah, man. Again, like there are people who are like the Halfley stuff doesn't make sense. Like he's just on the hot seat and he wanted to leave for a job that better suited him, which I also think.
Yes,
it's true.
Yes,
it's true.
It, both also, can be true.
Dude, college sucks right now. And there's a reason, like UCLA is going to play Ohio State next year. I actually don't know if that's true, but they're in the same conference, right? Chip left being the head coach of one of those teams to be the OC at another. That never would have happened to
willingly him. Took a demotion.
But guess what?
Yep.
I bet Chip doesn't see it like that.
Nope. I wouldn't either.
Alabama is another one that is interesting. Do you know who the defensive coordinators at Alabama are?
Is it co-defensive coordinators?
Co-defensive coordinators.
I wrote about this or had someone write about it the other day, and I've been so focused on the OC search right now.
Yeah, so it's Womack, who used to be the head coach at South Al, and then I'm forgetting his name, the dude who was at Buffalo, right? I mean, those are two guys who are sitting in FBS jobs as head coaches and decided to leave to be co-defensive coordinators for someone else. That never happens in the past.
Yeah.
Jason Candle, the guy at Toledo, has been rumored as a guy who wanted to take an offensive coordinator job at a bunch of different jobs, including Miami, right? That guy's won the MAC like three times. And he's looking at the MAC and he's like, you can't graduate out of the MAC. These are dead end jobs, right? Colorado's offensive coordinator. That was another one. He was the head coach at Kent State and was like, I'm going to go be the OC for Dion. How much of a, I almost dropped the F bomb. How much of a mystery box was Dion going into week one of last season? And that guy was like, I got to take the risk. Like, a lot of these jobs are dead end jobs now, man. It's interesting. It's really interesting and probably concerning for a lot of these coaches because they're like, why don't I just become the DC at Georgia and just stay there until someone gives me, I don't know, like the Michigan State job, right? Because I think a lot of these coaches now are looking at that and saying, like, that's the minimum that I can leave for. It's not, hey, you go turn around a Sunbelt team and then you'll get promoted into the SEC. Like, that's not how this stuff works out anymore. Nope. I mean, Jonathan Smith, I just brought up Michigan State. Jonathan Smith was at Oregon State. They were playing in the Pac-12. They were a top 10 ranked team at one point this past season. He was the Fiesta Bowl winning quarterback for the best team that Oregon State ever had. He was the head coach of that program, and he left for Michigan State. It's not good.
No.
It's not good. College football is really concerning right now.
Did you watch Chip Kelly's rant while he was still at UCLA about his ideas for changing college football?
Yeah, he was basically like everything, right? And like, you can't do that if they're not considered employees because they're not collectively bargaining. The NFL is an illegal entity that gets a antitrust wave, basically. And the union never wins anything in the NFL until they decertify and basically threaten to take that into court and saying, like, we're just going to blow the whole thing up. So I don't know what the heck is going to happen in college football because I don't know if they're going to be awarded the same antitrust, you know, waivers.
Didn't the SEC and Big Ten just announce they're exploring separating from the NCAA for football? Was that what
they? No, I mean, basically what it is it's just a false threat. It's basically just like, make sure the playoff favors us is what they came together to say.
That's already happening, brother.
It would not be shocking to me at all if, you know, the playoff is expanded to 12 teams, if eight of those teams end up being Big Ten and SEC teams. Like, it's the way we're trending right now.
Wow. Draft
talk. Those are my thoughts on Halfley in college football. Like, it's not good. Not good. Next week, though, linebackers.
Where do we want to start? Where do I need to start cramming?
Linebackers. Yes. I've seen like 20 of them. So we're watching linebackers. And then after that, I think offensive linemen, which is going to be a big task. So
I've got a few I watch, at least at the top. So I can start going into. I still haven't watched the Duke kid. No, I'll just be cramming. I'll have a whole nice office set up with natural light instead of just being inside the apartment with no windows. I can't wait. Oh, it's going to be glorious.
Yeah.
I'll be in heaven.
I don't know when it's going to come out next week. If it comes out next week, it'll probably come out early next week. If you don't see it by the 22nd, no, I'm in Cabo. And it won't come out until the week after that.
That's fine. I'll be still unpacking probably if we record early next week.
Hey, unpack. Let's go.
A shout out, unpack.
Any final thoughts?
I can't wait. It's It's good to be back and flexing these muscles. Shameless plug, but read my mock draft. It's pinned on my Twitter X thing. I'm going to try and start doing some more draft coverage for FanBuzz. Since we are such a strong college football brand, hopefully we can have some carryover there. But yeah, give all our stuff a read.
I'm clicking the mock draft right now, and I'm going to scroll down to the Packers pick, and I'm not going to spoil it.
You can spoil it. I don't care. You can spoil it.
I want people to click it. I'm going to go to it right now. I'm going to look at the Packers selection. Ooh, interesting. All right. Huh.
I just didn't want Dejean. I was sick. I got Dejean fatigue.
Interesting. So yeah, go click that mock draft. You'll maybe hear us next week, if not the week after, linebackers, and then we'll do offensive line, and we'll do running back safety. We'll talk about the combine by that point. Pre-draft visits is going to be a huge thing. Cannot stress enough. Pay attention to those. The actual visits, not just who the Packers are talking to at All-Star games and at the combine and stuff like that. That stuff doesn't matter. They talk to everyone at some point. But the actual pre-draft visits is a pretty good tell on who the Packers are targeting, or at least what positions that they're going to target. I think they've drafted like 5 guys in the last each of the last 2 drafts who are on pre-draft visits and stuff. So keep an eye out on that. Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.